This portion of our program brought to you by Allen Lund Company, Transportation and Logistics, working with the OIDA for 44 years and a proud sponsor.
OOIDA, representing America's truckers since 1973, presents Landline Now with your host, Mark Reddick.
It's the 50th anniversary of the announcement that the Beatles had broken up, and this is Landline Now. At some point, nearly all truckers will face getting a ticket or a citation, and some of them will be for what seems like silly or pesky violations. Our producer, Barry Spillman, and I will discuss several with Brian Martin, the boss man at the Chrome Shop Mafia. A lot of people are considering getting their own authority, but many complications lie in the path of anyone who wants to do that. I'll explore some of what you need to know with Tom Crowley and Tara Murdoch of OOIDA. And finally, the COVID-19 situation has shut down much of our government's operations, including Congress. But that doesn't mean things aren't happening, including things that could benefit the truckers who are keeping the country operating through the crisis. I'll get a rundown of what is working right now from OOIDA Director of Safety and Security Operations, Doug Morris. But first, today's headlines. OOIDA wants Congress to support truckers beyond the national emergency. Scammers are targeting small businesses applying for loans. And does anybody know how to make a mask for a bunny? And now, the news with Terry Scruton.
Thanks, Mark. OOIDA sent off a letter to Congress last Monday urging them to support truckers both during and after the COVID-19 national emergency. In a letter to leaders in both the House and the Senate, OOIDA President and CEO Todd Spencer said that, quote, unfortunately, it's taken a global pandemic for the media, the general public, and Congress to truly appreciate everything truckers do. Spencer said that truckers are facing a number of challenges during this time. However, he added that we shouldn't assume these problems will simply evaporate when the crisis is over. To that end, OOIDA is asking Congress to pass H.R. 610-4, the Truck Parking Safety Improvement Act, that would set aside dedicated funding for projects to expand truck parking capacity. In addition, Spencer asked Congress to support the FMCSA's efforts to reform hours of service regulations, address the persistent problem of excessive detention time, and repeal the overtime exemption for employee drivers in the Fair Labor Standards Act. Spencer said the association has additional recommendations that will help expedite freight movement during a national emergency and hopes Congress will address these issues in a, quote, meaningful and productive way. The federal government has started accepting loan applications from small businesses affected by the COVID-19 outbreak. Landline Now senior correspondent Scott Thompson has more on the way scammers are already trying to take advantage.
The call came in about 3 days after the OOIDA Life member put in the application. A voicemail said he had been approved for a $55,000 grant. Before calling back, he picked up the phone and called OOIDA's compliance department.
Luckily, this gentleman called us first, and we were able to tell him that this is a scam, not to call him back.
Adam Kleinschmidt, team lead for regulatory compliance at OOIDA, says the call itself was the first red flag.
They will not contact you via telephone. And if they contact you via email, there will be a reference number that you receive at the end of your application. And that's a very important number to know, to verify of anybody that's reaching out to you.
Kleinschmidt says that reference number is your first line of defense against scammers, and while this was the first report to OOIDA of a possible scam tied to these federal loans, he's sure it won't be the last.
This is the very first 3 days that this was in action, so if that's already how quickly these fraud scams or whatever are coming about, then it's going to get a lot worse, and they're going to get a lot more creative.
During the application process, people are asked to provide their banking info, and while that may not sit well with some, Kleinschmidt says there is an upside.
We're getting calls left and right. Hey, is this legit? They're asking for my banking info. Well, yeah, it is legit for them to ask you that. Nobody likes it, but if there's anything to be taken away from that as a good thing, is that they have that. So when these guys are reaching out to you, you know, with these scams, that's the information they're needing. Well, they won't need it if it's the correct people.
There are two federal loan programs for small businesses right now. Owner-operators are eligible for both. We have that information at landline.media. If you have any questions or think you might be the victim of a scam, call OOIDA at 1-800-444-5791. For Landline Now, I'm Scott Thompson.
OOIDA is urging the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration to deny a request for exemption from certain requirements of the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse that was submitted by a company associated with the movie industry. Motion Picture Compliance Solutions, a transportation compliance company based in Los Angeles, asked for an exemption to the requirement that an employer can't allow a driver to perform safety-sensitive functions prior to conducting a full query on the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. Instead, the company wants to be able to conduct a limited query before one of its member companies hires a driver. If the limited query turns up any concerns, then the driver would be subjected to a full query. In their request, the company says that the movie industry employs a pool of around 12,000 drivers who often find themselves working for more than one production-related motor carrier in a week. In some cases, that can be two or more in the same day. In its comments, OOIDA said this type of scenario is one of the reasons the clearinghouse was created, so that drivers with violations cannot simply move around to different carriers. OOIDA says waiving the full query requirements could allow drivers with drug and alcohol violations to return to the road before proper evaluation and treatment is completed. Several states have recently made more parking available for truck drivers. In Missouri, the state highway patrol says truckers can park at scale houses, including overnight parking, for the duration of the national emergency. There are some conditions, however, including not interfering with the operations of the facility, no littering, and no alcohol or drug consumption on state property. The highway patrol says that restroom facilities also may not be available at some sites. In Virginia, the State Department of Motor Vehicles made a similar announcement, offering parking at 11 of the state's way stations. The stations themselves are closed as motor carrier service centers until at least April 23rd. And in Pennsylvania, the state DOT announced the reopening of 5 more rest areas. That's in addition to the 28 rest areas the state had previously reopened following an outcry from the trucking industry when they were shut down in March. We'll have more information about available parking on our dedicated COVID-19 webpages at landline.media and OOIDA.com. The Indiana Department of Transportation has announced that it will be closing Interstate 70 in Indianapolis for 30 days, beginning on April 13th. The DOT said in a news release that the closure will come in two phases. Beginning April 13th, I-70 eastbound will close from the north split to Interstate 465. That includes all lanes and ramps and will last until May 13th. The second phase will begin on April 23rd with the closure of the westbound lanes of I-70 from I-465 to the north split. Those lanes will reopen May 23rd. The DOT says it is initiating the closures in an effort to finish work on a project to refurbish that part of the highway while traffic is low because of the statewide stay-at-home order during the COVID-19 outbreak. Traffic is down approximately 40% from where it was before the order went into effect. Detours will be in place for the full duration of the closures. And finally, with so much confusion surrounding who is an essential worker and who isn't, at least one government official went out of her way to make sure a couple of well-known figures would still be able to report to work. UPI reports that New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern took a moment during her COVID-19 media briefing recently to let children know that the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy are considered essential workers. Ardern added that, quote, "As you can imagine at this time, they're going to be potentially quite busy at home with their family as well as their own bunnies. So I say to the children of New Zealand, if the Easter Bunny doesn't make it to your household, we have to understand it's a bit difficult at the moment for the bunny to get everywhere. Hopefully this situation improves before we have to make a decision about Santa Claus." That's Landline Now News for today. Terry Scruton reporting.
Thanks, Terry. If you have questions about something happening out on the road during the crisis, or you want to report a problem that's making it harder for truckers to do their jobs, let OOIDA know. Call 816-229-5791 or email questions@OOIDA.com. John Osborne and OOIDA's tour truck, the Spirit of the American Trucker, are at the Petro Truck Stop in Kingdom City, Missouri. That's located at exit 148 on Interstate 70. Stop in, say hi to John, and join OOIDA for a $10 discount. Next, Barry Spillman and I discuss some pesky violations with Brian Martin of the Chrome Shop Mafia, and I'll talk with OOIDA's Doug Morris. I'm Mark Reddick, and this is Landline Now.
You can now save time weighing by using your smartphone. Download the Weigh My Truck app from the Google Play Store or the App Store. Find out more at weighmytruck.com.
Forgiveness, accuracy, weigh your truck on a cat scale.
This portion of our program brought to you by TA Truck Service. Did winter take a toll on your truck? Our expert technicians are here to help with your spring maintenance. Stop in today.
Landline Now. Thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Mark Reddick. It's time for another installment of Mafia Secrets, Advice from the Boss Man, with Brian Martin of Four State Trucks, home the Chrome Shop Mafia. And I'm here in Studio A with our producer and resident gearhead, Barry Spillman. And, of course, we are on the line with the boss man from Joplin, Missouri's Chrome Shop Mafia, Brian Martin. Brian, how you doing?
Brother, we're just loving life down here in Joplin. Doing well.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. There's a lot to love down in Joplin, especially now that Fred and Red's is back. I'm going to always bring that up.
Yeah. You're notorious for bringing up old Fred and Red's.
Oh, yeah. I love that stuff. Anyway, we got an interesting topic, Brian, which is the little violations that enforcement officers can write truckers up on that, you know, really are kind of surprising, and to a lot of people, they may never have seen them before, but I take it that you've kind of seen all of these at one time or another.
Yeah, it's funny how this stuff kind of comes and goes. I don't know if it's trends with law enforcement and DOT or if they have certain kind of campaigns, but, you know, things we struggled with 8 or 10 years ago, they never write tickets for anymore, and they're on to the next hot thing or the next big topic. So, yeah, they kind of cycle with the wind.
Well, you know, one of them, earlier this week, I had someone ask me about the regulations on window tinting. And, of course, looked that up, got the information to him. But that is one of those violations. But there's a whole host of them that deal with visual impairments. I'm kind of curious, Brian, what are some of the ones that you've seen in that category?
Like I said, we don't hear about this one as often as we used to. But you go back 6 to 8 years ago, sun visors, excessive length sun visors, you know, they're the big drop visors that cover the windshields, they were covering too much windshield, obstructing the driver's view, increasing the likelihood of accidents, and they were writing tickets on those. Since then, a lot of the visor manufacturers have quit offering those big 16, 17, 18-inch drop visors, and they've went back to stuff that still looks really stylish, but it's more reasonable. Back when this was a hot topic, we actually dug in, because we'd asked different scale houses and different DOT guys, you know, what is the reg? What is the legislation on this? And couldn't really find a across-the-board clear-cut answer. So we looked it up many years ago and found an old piece of law that said you could not cover more than 7 inches of the view through the windshield. And then when we started tracking that back and looking at the dates and whatnot, you could tell that it was back from the 70s. And remember when, you know, guys would hang the CB radio from the overhead console up there above the windshield? But the CB radio was bolted to the bottom of a linear that was bolted to the bottom of a radar detector that was bolted to the bottom of a scanner, and all this kind of stuff was just hanging down further and further and further until, you know, some lawmaker somewhere said, hey, we should have a law against this. The guy can't see through his windshield. And it seems like that's what it was geared towards. But when the trend of the big, big, big drop visors came out some years back, cops started using that same piece of legislation to say, hey, dude, your visor's hanging down too low. You got to get that off there. We're going to write you a ticket.
Well, and I know the tinting thing. I've never understood how it is they would measure that someone's in violation. It says that it has to allow 70% of the outside light in. I mean, do they have a window meter or something that detects this?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they can measure that in a split second. They've got a little tool. They'll have you roll down your door glass, and then they'll clip this piece over your the top of your door glass with the window rolled halfway down, and they can measure the level, the severity of the tint. And, yeah, if it's over 30%, you're going to get a ticket, or you're going to peel it right there sitting on the scale house parking lot, which I have done to get off the scale house and get going. But when it comes to commercial trucks, man, it's such a headache trying to tint the windows and get by with it. You can get by with a very light tint that does have some thermal benefit and, you know, kind of keeps the inside of your cab cooler in the summer. But if you even get close to that 30%, brother, you're going to get hassled. That's been my experience for the longest time.
You know, I'm starting to wonder too, Brian, as we look ahead here, we now have people that have dash cams. We have a system that replaces your mirrors with cameras. There's all kinds of other systems that want to spot up on that dashboard. And I wonder if we're going to get a situation like you described with the CBs back in the day where they're piling up more and more stuff. And at what point did the enforcement people basically say, and that's the one that's too much?
It could be. You know, some of the GPS systems I see have a pretty big screen on them. You know, I'd say some of them are maybe approaching 5 by 7 inches, maybe slightly larger. They're usually sitting on top of the dashboard somewhere. CB radios, yeah, you know, they're never going to go away, certainly never, but they're not as prevalent as maybe they were 2 decades ago. They're getting more compact, more sophisticated, so you don't need all those extra boosters and linears and things like that. Yeah, but who knows? Different television screens for like the camera-operated mirrors, backup cameras, fifth-wheel coupling cameras, things like that. They're all taking up required space on or about the dash, so that is maybe a concern. A lot of this stuff's getting really compact and multifaceted, to where maybe one video monitor could do camera mirrors as well as backup cameras. So who knows how much farther that'll take up space on the dashboards.
Well, let's go to another category here, Brian, and this is one that I've heard so much about, which is all the different ways that they can ticket you for things involving your marker lights. And my God, there are so many ways.
Oh, for sure. Essentially, if those wheels are turning and it's anything but red or amber, you are probably a prime target for some sort of a traffic ticket. You know, we all know it's got to be amber going forward, red facing backwards. Of course, you can get by with a backup light, you know, for slow moving reverse motion. But other than that, all the really cool lights, you know, trucks, TRUX came out with a dual revolution light 3 or 4 years ago to where you can turn all your red lights to purple with the flip of a switch, or to blue or to green. And that goes for amber to purple to blue to green. Those are all fine and dandy when you're sitting still, when you're just hanging out at the fuel pump, you're parked on the back row of the truck stop, you know, all that's fine and dandy. But if you're rolling and it's anything but red or amber, you better be fast on the trigger, because you could be sitting on the side of the road getting a violation and a fine assigned to you and your lit up vehicle.
Well, and there's also the one we had a few years ago involving lights on the back of the truck, where if it was anything other than the tail lights and the turn signal lights and the three marker lights at the top of the trailer, and all of a sudden they were saying, well, you can't have anything more than that. And that was just insane.
Yeah, that's another one we have seen sort of come and go. I don't know if it's just if you find the right officer in the wrong mood, if he's going to refer to some old ancient statute piece of legislation from back in the day or what. But, you know, if we go back to like 2005, 2006, we were stacking cab lights on the top of the roof of these Peterbilts and Kenworths. We were putting, you know, sometimes up to 15 cab lights across the top. And then certain states around here in the Midwest, I think possibly like Kansas being one of them, started writing warnings for if you had more than 5 cab lights, you know, you could get a warning, and I'm assuming eventually an out of service ticket. So guys had to start putting them on 2 switches. So you'd have your original lights on one switch, so you could light up 5 cab lights. And then if we added others, you know, they would have them on a second switch, so you could kind of maneuver the quantity of lights based on the cop and the scale house that maybe you might be setting in. But even that, I haven't heard of that being an issue in a long, long time. So technically, it may be a violation, but I don't know of anybody that has been enforcing it as of the last 3 to 4 years. But you're right. I've heard of guys and seen the document where they got a warning for too many cab lights, too many trailer lights, things like that. The other thing is, I've heard of guys that, you know, they equip their trailer with, you know, let's say 300 marker lights. I've had them get put out of service because they have a light that is not burning. So it's on the vehicle, but it's not lit up with the others. And I've been told that sometimes that can get you out of service, or at least a warning for having lights on the vehicle that are not burning in unison with all of the other lights on the vehicle.
Even though they're not required lights.
Right.
So it's basically whatever mood the guy is in.
I kind of think some of it, surely, don't you think, has to be
I think there's a lot of violations that, you know, that are like that.
Yeah, we've all had bad hair days, and maybe if you've got some authority and you're having a bad hair day, you take it off on your next next pullover or something like that.
Well, we just have a little bit of time left, but Barry, John Osborne with the Spirit Truck had told us about a particular thing. Can you kind of tell us, Brian and I, what we're talking about here?
I'll try to be quick with this. John gave me a great story about nearly getting an out-of-service ticket at a scale house just inside the Oklahoma border as he was heading toward the Joplin area. At that time, John was driving a Kenworth, had weed burners on it. I mean, he thought it looked cool. I'm sure it did. I wish I'd seen it. But the inspector knew exactly where to look for an exhaust leak. And he went in there under the cab, checked the exhaust out, found out that it was a leak, and said, all right, everything else. John was mad he didn't get the sticker for the truck and the trailer. But the trailer and the truck, everything was cool. But the cop said, all right, I'm going to let you go, but get this fixed right away. He went over the border. He knew exactly where you guys were. He went in there.
Uh-huh.
The guys at your shop gave him an idea for a better clamp and also told him, here's how you can look and see if that thing's leaking by painting spray paint on the exhaust pipe, silver spray paint. He said he could always see the dark if it was leaking.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
That's true. And if it's an underhood or under the cab or sleeper exhaust leak, it is most definitely, it could result in an out-of-service situation. You know, their theory is exhaust is going to leak, it's going to get into the cabin, driver's going to get drowsy because of the emissions in there, and, you know, valid points, you know, but nonetheless, you could find yourself out of service with an exhaust leak.
Boy, that, it's just, there's all kinds of other things we could go over today in this category, but that's one where, I mean, if you let someone know they can't do anything at roadside, they're going to have to bring it somewhere. It really puts that trucker in a heck of a situation.
It does, you know, and I think probably most of the time, law enforcement, you know, all these were invented and applied to law for good reasons, you know, good logical reasons. But sometimes in certain situations, they just get carried too far or get held down to the nth degree of the letter of the law. And that's when it becomes, you know, really frustrating and unfair in many cases. So all good intentions. It's just, you know, you got to know when to say when.
Okay. Well, Brian, we're out of time, but on behalf of Barry and myself, thank you for all the information.
It's been fun, guys. We'll catch you later. Be safe out there.
Thank you, Brian. We'll see you.
If you have questions for Brian Martin, you can email them to bossmanonlandlinenow@chromeshopmafia.com. I'm Mark Reddick, and this is Landline Now.
Stay informed by having Landline Now automatically delivered to your phone or other device every day. Just subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast app or try Bullhorn, which allows you to avoid nasty data charges.
Landline Now, welcome back. For many truckers, the ultimate dream is to be your own motor carrier, to have your own authority and run an entirely independent business. But a lot is required to get there. Here is some advice on what you would need to do are Tom Crowley of OOIDA's Business Services Department and Tara Murdoch of the Association's Permits and Licensing Department. Thank you both for coming.
Thanks for having us.
So let's kind of start at the beginning. What is the first step that you two would recommend when you're thinking about getting your own authority?
Research and evaluation.
Absolutely.
Know what you're getting into. And this all came about here a couple of days ago. I discussed with Tara. I said, wow, we're getting a lot of calls from people wanting to get their authority. And she mentioned to me.
Yeah, usually around this time we do see an increase of people wanting to get their own authority with tax refunds and stuff coming in. We do get a lot of new applications. And unfortunately, there's quite a few that don't ever follow through with it. Once they see insurance premiums, they see paperwork, everything that goes into it, they come to a screeching halt. And so, you know, we just want people to
know what you're getting into, you know, because it is a big step and it's a big investment.
Well, let's go to this. I mean, you talk about research and evaluation. There's all kinds of things that you're going to be responsible for when you're on an authority that you were not before as either a leased on owner operator or as a company driver. Give us a few examples of things that people are now responsible for.
Well, and prior to ever taking your first load, you have to have so many things in place. I mean, your authority, but then you have to have your drug and alcohol set up. You have to have a clean drug test result back. Vehicle maintenance, driver qualification files. And this is all stuff that as a driver or as a lease owner operator, you know, the carrier took care of. You know, you just went in, filled out the paperwork, and they took care of it all. When you get your own authority, you're responsible for that.
Well, and there's a lot of paperwork. I'm wondering if you can, Tara, talk a little bit about some of the first paperwork that they're going to run into as they start this process going forward.
Whenever they first want to look at getting their own authority, if they're going to do an LLC corporation, you know, they'll have to file that with the Secretary of State, the state they're based in. They'll have to get their EIN from the IRS, and then they can move forward with applying for the authority. We've got some forms that we would have to have them fill out as well, that we need in-house to be able to file on their behalf. And then, you know, once the DOT and MC number has been issued, then like Tom was talking about, the driver qualification file and drug and alcohol consortium, they can start getting that stuff set up.
And I would say, I would recommend that they look into, and something you had mentioned earlier, insurance. Big cost for insurance. Big cost for tagging your truck. You know, there's a lot of big costs that come into this.
One of the things that I think a lot of people don't think about with any small business is the money you have to have in reserve, because you've got to keep that whole operation going and feed your family, pay mortgage or rent, buy clothing if needed. You've got to do all that. And it may be a while before you get that first check from a load you've hauled. I mean, how much money should you have set back roughly?
3 to 6 months
yeah,
capital?
And that's difficult to have because that could be a fairly large number.
You're talking here like what would be the gross.
Yeah.
You'd need that much.
Yeah, you do. Because, well, I mean, you're looking at the fact that, you know, any loads that you haul, when you first start hauling loads, you know, you're 30 days out on pay on average, where, you know, leased onto a carrier, you're at most hopefully 2 weeks out on pay. But you get 30 days out and, you know, you're still fueling the truck. You're still doing repairs, paying your mortgage, feeding the kids, getting them ready for school, all this stuff. None of it stops. So you've got to be able to sustain till the money starts coming in.
Well, and you probably need to have a reserve set aside even while you're going, because crises can come up. I mean, you could have a health problem, and a lot of those things, I mean, a truck payment is not going to stop because you're off the road. The mortgage is not going to stop. Paying for food is not going to stop.
Absolutely.
That's true. And you know, that insurance payment, if you're not making your insurance payment, everything will stop because they'll close your authority down.
There you go.
And there's so many aspects to it. And this time of year, you got a lot of people looking at going that direction. And, you know, I would almost say, you know, really do your research first, because you just put so much money into it that to not succeed is a catastrophe.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the niceties of business. And one of them is you got to decide where you're going to haul. And I was actually listening to one of the OOIDA online courses on this topic, and they said it's amazing how many people, Tara, say, I'm going to haul all 48 states. nobody really does that in 1 year, do they?
Not necessarily. And there's four states that require an additional wait distance permit: New York, New Mexico, Kentucky, and Oregon. And whenever we're asking these guys questions to give them an authority quote, a lot of them want to go ahead and include those permits in there because they think they're going to travel all 48 states. Well, those permits require additional paperwork. It's an additional quarterly filing for New York, New Mexico, and Kentucky, regardless if you travel through the state or not. And then if you don't file them, they'll suspend your accounts, and there's additional paperwork that goes into getting them back up and running. So, yeah, we have a lot of people that say they want to run all 48 states, but then end up just running a few close to them, or, you know, some of them do long haul, but they get permits and stuff that they don't necessarily need, and it's additional paperwork.
Well, they come in so optimistic, you know, no doubt. And you want to be optimistic, you know, starting your business that, boy, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to go and make it. And you need that attitude, but there's some realistic factors that come into play.
Absolutely.
Outside of the four states that have that separate permit, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there additional potential costs if you're listing all kinds of states you want to run in, but you're not running in them?
That's under the new FRP.
Well, whenever you come time for the renewal on your plates, you're only going to be paying for the states that you travel through.
Okay.
And previously it was like that. If you listed them all and you had to estimate your miles in each state and stuff, but they've changed that up a little bit.
That's a little better.
It's a little better. But then, you know, there are always other things that will come back and bite you, like some ad valorem taxes in different states that just want to tax you for doing business as you drive through their state. I mean, there's all kinds of things that will come back and get you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you know, you talk about tags, of course, IRP is its whole other system you've got to be aware of, and IFTA. And of course, IRP you just talked about there as far as paying based on the miles you run in each state. Talk a little bit, either one of you, about IFTA, what it is, what it does, and I think the most important thing, how complicated it is.
IFTA is, you know, kind of like the same thing. You have to keep track of all the miles traveled in every state, all the gallons of gas purchased, and you'll have a quarterly filing that you have to complete. If you don't complete it, then you'll get different penalties and extra fees included in there, and, you know, they can suspend your account.
Yeah, absolutely. And IFTA, another issue of it, and I know this was another show, but I'll touch on it briefly, is with people's ELD, you know, because most trucks have to run ELDs at this point. And they say, well, it's got IFTA included in it. You still need to be doing a trip sheet. Because for IFTA, the requirements are different than the ELDs. The ELDs require one ping an hour and, you know, not near the tracking stuff that IFTA requires. They require a ping every 15 minutes, routes that you're on, mileage in and out of the state, gallons purchased, what your fuel per your miles per gallon are. All that stuff figures into IFTA. So don't just think your ELD is going to do it for you.
Now, something else that I know comes up, and this is one I think a lot of people may not know about, is having a process agent in every state you're going to drive in. Can you explain what we mean by a process agent and how the heck do you find one or sign up for them?
So we offer a service for our members that we become the blanket company and we will list a process agent in every state, the BOC3.
That's the form. That's,
yes, that is something that we'll do for our members. Now, if somebody is not a member, then, you know, of course, they could sign up for membership. We'll sign up. We'll file it on their behalf. But basically, you know, if you're based in Missouri and something happens in Tennessee, they can't serve you the paperwork in Tennessee from Tennessee. So they send it to the process agent who gets it to us, and then we make sure that the member gets it.
And this is for anything you might be served on.
Right.
Okay. And that, of course, is unfortunate if you have to be served, but nonetheless, it's a requirement. One other thing here, we're not going to get to all of this, I'm sure, but because there's so much involved here, the insurance requirements. Tom, you've talked about that two or three times, and I'm curious if you can kind of describe what the basic requirements. I mean, you may want to get more, but what do you have to have in order to have your own authority?
Well, at a minimum, you have to have the $750,000 liability. you will find that most brokers that want to use your services require you to have at least $1 million. There's cargo insurance on the side. There's some other contingent insurances. Just to cover your truck, your physical damage, and there's insurance is just a whole maze. You really want to talk to before you. And this is another thing: before you get your authority, you want to make sure you can get insurance. Insurance has just turned into a whole different animal in the last 10 or 15 years. Just really, really vicious.
And not everybody can get insurance. There's a lot of things, and certainly went all sorts of information that we could talk about on that. But I do want to get to some of these other points. There's a certain information, Tara, that you need in order to start filing for the actual authority. I know, for example, they've got to provide the VIN for the vehicle. What are some of the other pieces of information that they've got to make sure they have and that they gather up?
Usually whenever we complete an application, we'll ask for the federal tax ID number, full complete truck information if they have it, and then the rest is just general questions.
And the truck information is like make, model, gross rated vehicle weight, and I think you have to provide purchase date and price, right?
We do ask for that if they have it available, yes.
Okay.
And so much of that stuff is it seems like, not hard to come up with, but you've got to have all that information together for not just getting your authority, but in even to get an insurance quote, you've got to have a lot of that same information together because they've got to have a driver, they've got to have a truck, a CDL related, everything. And it all comes back to, that chief bottle washer and mechanic, you've got to be able to jack of all trades. You've got to be able to do it all.
Absolutely. I was telling Tom earlier that I had a guy call me Friday, and we were going through the process of working up an authority quote for him. And, I was telling him some different files and stuff that he's going to have. And he said, "Lady, I just want to get in the truck and drive."
That's a misconception that this goes throughout the industry, that it's just get in and drive, and there's so much more to it. It's your business, and if you don't operate like a business, it won't be a business any longer.
Well, some of the things, you have to decide what kind of freight you're going to haul, what kind of equipment you need for that. You do have, I think, Terry, you were referring to the new entrance safety audit that you've got to be prepared for. So
absolutely.
We could go on and on about it, but those are just some of the considerations, and thank you both for joining me and kind of filling people in.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
I've been talking with Tom Crowley and Tara Murdoch of OOIDA about some of the complications involved in getting your own authority. And if you need help, you can call OOIDA at 816-229-5791. Again, that's 816-229-5791. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the program. I'm Mark Reddick, and this is Landline Now.
Hi, I'm Paul Jr. of American Chopper. I'm known for awesome custom bikes, but I grew up in a family steel business that depended on work trucks. And like any owner-operator knows, if your truck isn't working, you're not making money. That's why more and more owner-operators trust True North Warranty to protect their investment with the most comprehensive and affordable coverage for the powertrain, turbo, and after-treatment components. Check it out at mytruckwarranty.com/OOIDA. True North is a proud corporate sponsor of the OOIDA.
Landline Now. Welcome back. The COVID-19 situation has shut down much of our government's operation, including Congress. But that doesn't mean things are not happening, including things that could benefit the truckers who are keeping the country operating through the crisis. Here with a rundown of what is happening is OOIDA Director of Safety and Security Operations, Doug Morris. Doug, how are you doing?
Well, hanging in there, Mark, hanging in there.
I think we all are.
Yep.
At this point. Well, obviously, D.C. is, like the rest of the country, just kind of behind closed doors. But, of course, people are able to operate through phone calls, through the internet, and so on. And I know you've been involved in a lot of contacts with various government agencies. Give us a couple of examples of some of the things that you've been working on with those government agencies related to truckers and what they're doing.
Yeah, so I'm work hand in hand with folks at DHS, TSA, and now FEMA. FEMA has set up a National Business Emergency Operations Center, and dealing with them on a daily basis, and folks who are involved with the COVID-19 task force. From the onset, obviously we had some issues with the CDL driver's license, and a lot of our folks in the Grand Valley got involved in that, and we were able to get a extension for those who had a expired CDLs that expired after March 1st. With that came the problem with HMEs that has a material endorsement. That is run basically by another agency, that's the TSA. It took some time to do that because TSA has to – they go through different processes of getting things done. They finally came out with that exemption similar to the CDLs, where if your HME expired March 1st, it's now it's fine until after this crisis. And now we're dealing with obviously the TWIC. The TWIC is something's going to come out TWIC this week, end of this week, starting next week. I'm not sure it's going to be that great because TSA is basically telling me that all the enrollment centers are still open and you can go online and get a date to get your TWIC expiration taken care of or a new TWIC. So, obviously I'm not sure what that is going to look like, but we've been working with them. Obviously, daily we've been working with FEMA. Obviously we've seen things that, when we've heard of truck stops or rest areas being shut down, we jumped on it right away. We, made calls to the state governments, made calls to the federal government, saying to FEMA, saying, "Hey, we got an issue." And those things got relieved pretty quickly. It didn't open to our satisfaction, but some of those rest stops did open up.
Yeah, and we're still having some that have opened the parking, but not the restroom facilities. But, I think it's step one, then step two. Now, at the same time, even though Congress is meeting, I think one of the things people don't realize is how much members of Congress do beyond just going to meetings of various congressional committees or of the Congress itself. And I know you've been in contact again, you and your colleagues, with members of Congress and their offices. What are some of the things happening at that level right now?
There's a lot of proposals on the table right now. Something just came out today, a proposal it's called the COVID-19 Heroes Fund the Democrats have put together, and I'm sure the Republicans will have a response. But it's basically giving incentives or premium pay or additional monies to those who were on the front lines. I'll read the first paragraph. Essential frontline workers, which truckers are included, are the true heroes of America's COVID-19 pandemic response. Senate Democrats believe in providing premium pay to frontline workers during this pandemic to reward essential frontline workers, to ensure the retention of essential workers who are working grueling hours on the front line of this crisis. So obviously they're looking at these things. I mean, our actions, things on social media, grassroots, in the areas, the different areas, these things are working. People are starting to realize how essential truckers are. And, we're bringing to the front line all the problems that we've had over the years. Obviously, it's been an ongoing thing with shippers and receivers not allowing people or allowing truckers into the bathrooms. We push this up front. We say, listen, these guys are out here busting their butts. And, they're scared of this. I mean, I'm scared of it. I mean, I'm washing my hands every day. Every time I touch something, I'm going to wash my hands or putting sanitizer on. But, these folks are out here on the front line. They should be able to use, at the very least, the washrooms at these in restaurants. Of these shippers and receivers. We're telling the states to keep their truck stops open, keeping the washroom facilities open. Some are listening, some are not. Obviously, we're pushing and pushing and pushing for that. And we have some other things working in the works for that. There's some national emergency volunteers that have stepped forward, and we've talked to them about different things that we could moving forward. And they're trying to work on something, some kind of project with that, dealing with that, with possibly remote showers and remote parking for drivers, providing hot meals. Deals, those type of things. But, moving forward, I think this is the time for a reset in trucking. Right now, it seems like the trucking industry is being respected. The drivers are pretty much being respected. And, I think this is the time we need a reset. This is a time when we need to come together and get things done. We need more membership. We need more involvement from folks. And I think we can get some things done that are very positive for the trucking industry moving forward.
One of the things that came up today, I was on another of the SiriusXM radio shows, and a driver called in talking about the lack of access for truckers to things like personal protective equipment, like masks, to hand sanitizer or sanitary wipes or other disinfectants. And I know that that's been an issue with the government, is how to get that stuff to truckers when they're having trouble getting it to hospitals. Do we know anything in terms of action coming up that might help that situation?
So we've been working on this for some time, obviously, behind the scenes. Yeah, if we finally came to crossroads with a lot of different issues, that's why our president came out with that letter to the president saying, hey, help. We need help. Because this stuff's not out here. Unless you had hand sanitizer before or anything like that, PPE stuff, yeah, before the COVID-19 or the coronavirus, you ain't got it now because you can't get it. You can't get it nowhere. And the stuff that they are getting is going to emergency essential folks. And we're starting to see that our country has been very reliant on other countries for this stuff. I think after this, you're going to see a lot of legislation from folks on the Hill saying, hey, this stuff needs to be produced and manufactured in the United States in case something like this happens again. These masks, you can't get them. And the things that cost 90 cents before are now, the states are being charged $7, $8 a piece for them. It's ridiculous.
And I know there, for example, certain medications that are produced in other countries where those countries don't want it leaving their borders, and all of a sudden people who need medications for non-COVID purposes are having trouble getting them. So this is a real problem. Doug, I did want to get to one other thing in the time we have left, and that is obviously this crisis is going to reach an end at some point. And in the later part of this year, hopefully we're going to be moving back towards some kind of normal. What types of things should we be expecting in terms of activity on some of these issues as we get out of the crisis?
Well, I think you're going to see some incentive packages for the trucking industry. You're going to see freight just die down considerably after this. You're going to see some industry folks who haul, let's say, cars and trucks. They're going to probably go out of business. So you're going to see some type of incentive programs come from the Hill. We're working with them, and hopefully we can keep these businesses afloat. And hopefully moving forward into 2021, they'll still be around, and hopefully trucking industry will thrive and be much better. I hope 2021 or end of 2020 will be better, and I hope 2021 will be a great year for trucking and to the truck drivers. I'm starting to see on the government level how dysfunctional they are and how they do not know what the trucking industry brings to the table and what truck drivers do. I mean, when they came out with CDC guidance, telling truck drivers just to stay in the truck, obviously they didn't know what truck drivers do. They want to make sure that the cargo is good. They want to make sure that the cargo coming off is in there, not disappeared, and things of that nature. It's amazing to see that so many subject matter experts in government aren't really experts whatsoever.
There you go. Well, Doug, not much of a surprise there. Thank you for all the information. We sure appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
I've been talking with OOIDA's Director of Safety and Security Operations, Doug Morris. And folks, once again, I want to remind you that if you have a specific question, email questions@OOIDA.com. Thank you for joining our program. I'm Mark Rettig, and this is Landline Now, news for truck drivers on the air and online.
I'm a dad.
A son.
A husband.
Wife.
I'm a writer.
Photographer.
I farm.
I'm a veteran.
I love old cars.
Fishing. My kids.
Chrome. And I am.
I am a professional truck driver.
And together, we are OOIDA.
OOIDA was founded by truckers to stand up and speak on behalf of truckers. We've done that by combining the individual voices of our members into a single, powerful voice. Protecting your interests, defending your rights.
Join us!
Make your voice heard. Join OOIDA, the Owner-Operator Independent Drivers Association. Call 1-800-444-5791 or visit OOIDA.com.